I started it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's a for the day. So, okay, we want to. Okay, I should introduce ourselves. It's
June 28th,
and this is the University of West Florida, and it's collective bargaining between the University of West Florida Board of Trustees and the United Faculty of Florida chapter of the University of West Florida. I'm Mike Malamar.
Kim LaDuff.
Jamie Sprague.
John Fink.
Daniel Pace.
Dan Lucas.
Okay, so we have responses to what you put on the table. I appreciate that we've been able to get back together really quickly. And one of the things we wanted to do is to explain to you what the situation is with our funding and with performance funding, because I know that you had what was provided by the Board of Governors, which would reflect that there's $10 million in performance funding this year, which for a lot of reasons... could be a little bit misinforming, and we wanted to show you why. So what we did is we went and got all of the backup and reflected the entire history of all performance funding. And then we're going to talk about it. Here's this. I'm going to do the next one, John.
Okay.
So somebody else shows up. And Dan, you're going to help me through this, but I'm going to tell you what this reflects. So when we get performance funding, we get performance funding for a year, and then it's taken back from us. It's not recurring. So it expires, basically. The only time that we get something that's above and beyond our performance funding is if you finish in the top three, you get additional dollars.
To the base. When you say
what they do actually is they take the performance funding three, the bottom three lose money, the top three get a cut of money. And we, like for example, last year we were able to receive funds as a result of that. So this year, among a number of other things, the legislature changed the way performance funding is being done.
Yes.
And there's also changed the way the accounting is being done. So one of the things they changed is they eliminated the bottom three, and they eliminated the top three. So even though we finished in the top three, we're not getting any more money. We're actually losing the money we got last year. So we're actually upside down on performance funding. We're realizing less than we have in the past. So if you look at what we have gained in recurring money from performance funding, that is reflected in the second column for fiscal years 2015 to 2020. And then what we've paid out in recurring wage action since then is $10,969. So we're actually $12,000 short. So,
taking that includes the commitment for next year's COLA. That's the last line in there.
Yeah. So, when you identify on the Board of Governors handout for June 12, 2019, that we have $10,442,148, we actually don't. That's money that would basically just be reauthorized. It's $10 million, not new dollars, but it's $10 million that's already in our budget from last year that we're just able to keep.
Now, are you differentiating recurring funds from non-recurring funds in that conversation? Because when you say that $10 million is already in our budget, right? Now, that would have to be budgeted for single item expenditures, right? Because those are non-recurring funds.
Well, the way the money works actually is, this is a summary of everything related to performance-based funding, both on the revenue side of the budget, both reoccurring and non-reoccurring.
Okay. Right?
And the net effect of the reoccurring increase is the 10.9. So what happens, in essence, is every year each university has to kind of ante up a piece of what was existing budget, put money at risk.
That's the and whatever, university investment.
Whatever the other investment was mm-hmm. from the state is also at risk that year. Mm-hmm. And that number changes every year based on a formula. Mm-hmm. But then the following year, it's taken away because it's at risk.
Yeah.
Right? So what we're trying to show is the net effect of what's actually happened in the budget. Mm-hmm. That's we consider reoccurring because we've been able to sustain it. Really.
Okay.
Even though
the
at-risk piece is still there every year, mm-hmm. and they could change the metrics by which we lose it if they want to be more aggressive.
But we are looking at a substantial subset of the overall budget picture.
The performance
substantial. Funding. I don't know about
that. We have a revenue of about $140 million.
Yes.
All right, so we're looking at about 10. So I think we need to see the overall picture, not just a subset mm-hmm. of a portion of the budget.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could be true.
That is true.
Daniel, we're told that even if you look at the overall budget, there's no new dollars anywhere in that budget for us to commit to a wage action.
But as I understand it, if we are saying that you are not able to afford certain things, at that point we are entitled to see the overall budget.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Perfect.
But I think what this is addressing is that, not last session, but the session before that, your team came to us with the last document in this package and identified $10 million as new monies available for wage actions. And what we're responding to is that's mm-hmm. not the case. We don't have $10 million to be able to spend on wages.
One of the things real quickly, so what I hear you saying also is that even though that the state investment funds are one-time funds, so we know that they are coming and going, that, Dan, what I heard you say is that the university still considers those, in a sense, as recurring funds, anticipating that those are coming and going on an annual basis, right? That those are budgeted in a way of considering them as recurring funds. Now, that wasn't my expectation in the past or going forward. We will certainly keep that in mind going forward, that those are considered as recurring even though they're one time.
That it's considered reoccurring. I mean, there is risk involved, right? Yeah. But mm-hmm. we have to manage over time. So it's not the mm-hmm. same as it used to be where everything was kind of static.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say that it's
sure.
considered reoccurring.
Yeah,
it is a different animal.
I mean, I think that's kind of the balance that we're trying to navigate. You know, we've historically, when we moved into the funding model, if you remember when it was very first implemented, it was actually recurring dollars, right? Remember, like the first year or so, those were recurring funds, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's maybe 1 year where they were recurring, and then the Board of Governors said, look, we're not going to do this with recurring funds. We're going to use one-time funds on this. It's the state investment. This is going to fluctuate. So at that time, in the context of our bargaining sessions, the bargaining teams came to an understanding that out of those funds are what we would negotiate one-time things that we're implementing, right, as bonuses, you know, one-time wage actions. But the understanding of that state investment, specifically with the performance-based funds, is a non-recurring wage action. So what I hear you saying also here, though, which is a little bit different, is that the university is also considering even those funds that they're one time as recurring in the sense for a budgeting consideration, right? And thinking of them in that context of trying to maintain those as well. So we understand your position on this, and we appreciate you taking the time to
okay.
talk to this. And I don't mean to interrupt you. If there's other additional thoughts or things that you have on this.
No, it's just that I think that we wanted to first off respond to the thought that we had $10 million in performance money that was mm-hmm. going to be that could be spent for wage actions in 2019-2020. So we have a response to each of the four issues that was raised in our last bargaining session. The first will be salaries. Um, So, there were several issues in Article 25, and I'll just go through them. There was a proposal for a 5% non-recurring wage action to be effective on September 1st, I think, 2019. Our offer is a $500 non-recurring wage action on prior to August 1st, 2019.
So that 500 is supposed to be in red, it's in black?
The 500 is supposed to be in red.
Okay.
We have the, on 25.4, for the one-time base salary adjustment, you had suggested that we made two changes to that. One is that people receiving distinguished
university
professor increases would be excluded from the calculation, and we picked up on that. We'll agree to that. And there's also we picked up that somebody who has processed their retirement but they're still active would not be ineligible. We made that change. So that's
what about the SPE? That was the other one. If they have an SP, that was the other one we agreed to in spirit in our conversations. That if someone has received an SPE increase, that would be excluded from the calculation.
You know, I'm gonna have to check on that because what came back to me was those two changes. So I know we articulated the SPE. So I don't know if that's part of it or not. Let me see. It says, for the purpose of determining based on tip awards will be included in the calculation, but administrative supplements and salary increases resulting from faculty member being named distinguished university professor will not be included.
So previously in our conversation, you said that the university's position was that they were willing to withhold the sustained performance evaluations from that calculation of base salary.
Okay. Well, let me confirm that. When we go into a caucus.
Simply because we don't want... Those are meritorious increases, right? That are in the same... thought. All we added in last time was the distinguished university professor as in that same spirit, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
We don't want to penalize someone for getting a, you know, a distinguished meritorious increase and then...
I get you. I understand. Okay. I'll just clarify that.
Okay.
I don't know if that was intentional or an oversight when this was prepared.
Okay.
25.10 is another stab at this language. Now, this language is...
How many counts?
25.10. Now, this language is not something that we created, but we went into the collective bargaining agreements of the other universities in the state university system, and eight of them have this language.
Yeah, I've reviewed this also, yeah.
So we thought maybe... If it's working there, it would work here.
I can speak to the 25.10 for a second. I don't want to interrupt you, though.
No, go ahead. So
you're correct. Yes, this is the standard language that says if it's salary for if it's under the established FTE, it's provided through salary. If it's above this at the established FTE, it's provided through OPS. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what we have now, right, what the language currently says in the sense that above an FTE is OPS, right?
Mm-hmm.
This just clarifies that under that is provided through salary,
right?
Now, that doesn't necessarily resolve the issue of that is the context of the grievance. Right, you know, which is that these are duties that are above, certainly our position is that these are duties for those individuals that are above the established FTE position, right, that they should be provided through OPS, which would also be consistent with the language that we have here.
I think in furtherance of that, you identified four individuals who would fall into that category, and they would have to be compensated by OPS because this is what the language says.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I spoke with Justin Davis, our grievance officer. Like, he's willing. Well, we think a good path forward on this. We're happy to adopt this language. I can say that, you know, that's here.
Okay.
Adopt this language. I think that's a good clarification. what we would recommend doing for that grievance is we'll push that timeline back to give a month or so to give the university time to resolve those payments in that forthcoming academic year, right? You know, and so there's two paths that the simplest path is just simply to correct those four individuals, right, and to have those align with OPS, right? Those mm-hmm. and in that case, we would be able to withdraw the grievance. If the university's position, as was stated previously, that those funds, even though some are provided out of ENG and some are provided out of OPS, that they're all essentially OPS, right? If that is the position of the university, it can be resolved by providing just that same voluntary acceptance or rejection letter for those duties, right? If those letters are sent out for all of those individuals in both camps, that would also resolve it.
That would resolve the grievance.
Yeah, to our satisfaction.
Jimmy, you understand all that?
I think so. Can I just re-clarify to make sure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What you're saying for the four individuals mm-hmm. is that they need to be corrected to all be paid from OPS?
That would be the simplest way to resolve like the grievance and put it in a line with the contract language. Both this language that's been proposed here, that would be in compliance with this language and in compliance with the language that currently exists in our position, right?
Okay.
That's the simplest way to do it. If the university's position, another option, another route would be to if the university wants to continue paying those out of those two separate pots of money, under the argument that it really is all OPS, then what would bring that into compliance is for, in our position, is for those individuals all to receive those voluntarily accept or reject letters.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say, let's just take your case for instance, mm-hmm. where you're paid $2,500 with an admin sub and $2,500 mm-hmm. as extra state comp.
Mm-hmm.
You would be fine with that pending acceptance of this language in the collective bargaining agreement as long as you received the opportunity to accept or reject the admin.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so either, so in my specific situation, if I received a letter that said you're receiving, so those are $2,500 each.
Correct.
Right? So
mm-hmm.
so if I received a letter that says you're receiving $5,000 in OPS, right, and to accept or reject in total, that would be in compliance with the CBA. If I received a letter that said you're receiving $2,500 out of ENG and $2,500 out of OPS, and you have the right to voluntarily accept or reject these, that we would, and under the argument that the university put forward that these are all essentially OPS.
It's not going to be OPS. It's going to be extra duties.
Or extra duties, yeah,
right.
or extra duties, right? That's
okay.
I think that would put us in compliance. The simplest way, really, though, is to make them all uniform as OPS of those four individuals.
But what I heard you say, though, if we adopt this language in here, we could continue to pay you the way we're paying you.
Because
as long as you have the opportunity to accept or reject both,
we would accept that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're on the same page.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now for Article 26, I know that the issue was a request to increase the tuition waiver credits from 6 to 9, and I know that you provided us with.
Did you want to handle that?
I was going to talk about it for a second.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
When I give me bad news, I usually talk first. Because when I give them the bad news, they're looking at it, they're like, stop listening to me. So anyway, I know that there's a part of the statute that says university employees can have 6 credit per semester tuition per. And then there's another section that says in the best interest of the university, it actually says something like out-of-state tuition and fees, so something that can maybe waive, which, like in an extraordinary instance, you can waive a tuition and the fees for a student. But the way that legal is reading that is when they have an express particular provision in the law, and then there's some more general freedom, yeah, you're stuck with the express. Like if it didn't say
six credits at all in the section, then there would be, we'd have more legal freedom to do something about that. But when it says you have six, how that's being read, and not just here, but being at other universities, it says that's it. I know you showed me FIU's thing, and FIU has nine. I saw that.
Ten.
FIU, yeah. I don't have an explanation for that. But I do know that in some of the other universities that I'm at, the general counsel of those universities feel the same way and have opined the same thing, is that six is the cap. So anyway, our counter is six, which is basically
status quo.
On the ability to waive tuition credits for dependents. So that's that. Now, the third issue was whether we could enter into a memorandum of understanding. Kind of all of these come together. We really want to reach an agreement on all four of them and close up the contract. So we're doing this for that purpose. And that's our goal here. With regard to the memorandum of understanding that was proposed to us by you with regard to Article 3 and waiving the cap for 2019-2020, we're willing to do that. And lastly, with regard to the proposal of a memorandum of understanding for the associate clinical professor and clinical professor positions, we have a slightly revised memorandum of understanding, but it's in substance doing what you've asked us to do. You know, instead of like putting that in the collective bargaining agreement and then having something that says no one can promote it, what we thought we would do is make it clear that we have some work to do, which means we have to establish these positions, and then we have to go to PERC and have them put in the bargaining unit. And this memorandum of understanding recognizes those steps and says it will do those. So this thing says, this memorandum of understanding goes through all of the steps, which is we will agree to create these two new positions. We will go to PERC and petition for their inclusion in the bargaining unit, and then people will be prevented from eligibility for application for promotion until the 2023-2024 academic year, which is what you had proposed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you're not willing to put them, into the same structure of the percentages of those positions?
Not at this moment.
Not at this moment.
Not at this moment, but okay. I haven't heard anything that had any heartburn about what the percentages were. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't been an issue. The issue has been kind of, we don't want to get out in front mm-hmm. of ourselves and put the cart before the horse. We want to first create these positions and then include them in the contract after their creation.
Okay. So just in summary, the changes, you've added in a $500 bonus, mm-hmm. right?
The COLA stays the same.
The COLA has already been ratified, right? It stays the same. And then the inversion increase is the same, except it's actually less, taking out the sustained performance component, right? That you're going to look for clarification on that.
Right? I mean, when you say take it out, was it, just for my clarification, was it ever in there, or did we just
Expressed on the tapes that the university would accept that as a condition.
Okay.
You said we'd be willing to accept. There was three components initially, right? It was in the calculation of base salary with removing the SPE amount. It was the also the language about this. We already discussed striking this tender to resignation line, which hasn't been struck here. It's back
it
in
has.
Here. No,
okay,
it has not been struck.
We intend to do that.
And with the fourth element was adding in the distinguished university professor, which we said would have actually no practical application, financial encumbrance. We have six of them, and I've gone back through there and looked at them. But as a standard, it's of a piece.
Well, definitely, I know for a fact that the eligibility of people who have put in for retirement but are still active is something we're committed to. So if that's not struck out, I didn't do that version of it. So that's just an oversight.
And then additionally, it's in the two memorandum of understanding. Okay, thank you for these proposals. We'll review them. A couple of things to think about before we caucus.
Yeah.
Essentially, what we're navigating here is we have to get this contract ratified, Right. And what our membership are concerned with is that, you know, we understand the arguments that you're putting forward about the financial situation at the university, right? Those are things we try very hard as a bargaining team to listen to the university's position on things and their statements about the university structure, right? That's something we're committed to listening to. Simultaneously, our faculty recognize that have received the second highest in the state. This is multiple years of success. In President Saunders' messaging, she has said, which we agree with completely. She said, you know, congratulations to you for such a stunning success. Every division on campus has played an important role in our progress. Right. Congratulations on an awesome accomplishment. We are no longer the best kept secret in Florida. People throughout the state are sitting up and taking notice of Argonaut Nation. We have earned widespread respect and goodwill because of you. I am proud to be your president. Right. So from a messaging perspective, our faculty are on one hand getting this message is that our success is a function of their participation as well as everyone's, while simultaneously they're getting a message in like the practical effects of that is that we don't have money or these sort of things. Now, we'll have a path forward, I think, that navigates both of these concerns. But in order to get this contract ratified, faculty need to be able to look at it and have a clear sense of how the rhetoric and messaging that's coming out of the university is also mirrored in the contract itself, right? It's reflected in the benefits of that contract. We believe there's a path forward on that we can talk about that recognizes both of our concerns, but if we put this contract as it exists forward, I went through the numbers on the inversion increase and with the spreadsheet that I have, right? It affects a total of 20 faculty members, right? For out of 350 for a financial encumbrance of $79,000, right? It's a very little encumbrance, and it's not going to affect very many faculty, right? And so I think that there's going to be a big concern of whether or not this would be ratified by faculty if this is the proposal in its entirety that's put forward. So that's kind of where we're thinking and navigating, where our clients are focused. We'll review these and talk about it, and I think have some proposals or counterproposals that will navigate those concerns.
All right. And, you know, in that letter, I think, Jonathan, in terms of the president being clear, I think she says, if I'm looking at the same letter that you're looking at, she says it has been a difficult year on the budget scene for the state university system. The SUS received an overall budget reduction of $35.3 million during the legislative session. And UWF's share of the system-wide reduction is $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. We're not disputing those numbers or facts.
I'm just saying, I think she's being transparent that this is not a good budget year for UWF or anybody in the state system. I don't think UWF is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So the.
It's my client there, Dan.
So the question.
Just going back so I can hear, but when we're talking about the inversion stuff. Basically, merit-based promotions should be pulled away for the calculation of the baseline salary.
I understand the thought process because then you're really
right. You're penalizing people
for being meritorious.
Right.
I'm up again.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Good.
So the essentially, what we're trying to navigate is recognizing the budgetary realities that I hear you all presenting, while simultaneously finding a path forward where faculty can look at a contract and see that this is providing benefits to them, reflecting also the positive rhetoric that we see.
Okay.
That's what we're navigating.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I know it's already reflected in the numbers we gave you, but still, and we're certainly committed to the COLA, and I realize it doesn't start in August, but it starts halfway more than halfway through the year. But that still has to be, it's a recurring expense that has to be paid out of this budget year, and even though we had negotiated it in the previous round of negotiations, it hits our budget this year, you know, so.
And the other challenge I think you do have is the way that the overall performance-based funding is messaged at the press level. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of big numbers thrown around, and it sounds like there's new money every year.
Yeah.
It's like millions of dollars. The reality is it's not quite as robust for us.
Yeah. Well, and we're and as I said, we are willing to hear that argument, the financial argument, right? Like our counterproposal is not going to be a financially encumbering argument, but it's trying to navigate like that. I don't think as put forward that in its entirety, this would be a package that faculty are
okay
to ratify.
I'm with you. I understand your position. Do you want to take a call?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.